Welcome to Documentary Diehards, the show where three sports fans break down one 30 for 30 documentary each and every episode. Bren, Sam, and Nick here. How's it going, guys? Sam, what's up?
Bren, I'm just going to start off right away. I've got a question for you.
Uh-oh.
Okay.
What are your thoughts on the fact that baseball is slowly killing itself by allowing Clayton Kershaw to leave the game in the seventh inning with a perfect game? There's been 22 perfect games in the history of baseball. He's thrown 80 pitches, and they pull him from the game. And that's just ridiculous, and I'm mad about it. And I want you to defend baseball and tell me why I should even keep watching it.
Well, if you want me to defend baseball, it helps me because I'm trying to figure out what my take is. Because I've been thinking about this since it happened. Like, I can take both sides, right? Ultimately, Kershaw is catcher, and everyone was kind of all on the same page. And like, he was like, yeah, it wasn't going to happen because of the lockout, and he hadn't really picked up a baseball until less than a month ago. So he just, 80 pitches was kind of his limit, which is unfortunate, and because it's 80 and it sounds like such a low number relatively. But I mean, then the other side of it is like what you said. I mean, if it's a no hitter, that's a completely different story. There's been, like you said, 22 perfect games. There's been hundreds of no hitters. It sucked. You want to see something so rare happen. Who knows if it would have, but I don't know. It does hurt kind of fans for sure. Like, what do you come for if they're not even going to give you a chance when something so rare is about to happen to see it? But ultimately, you got to understand that they're trying to win a World Series, and he's been injury prone late in the season, especially throughout his career. And that's been one of the hangups on him. He's like, oh, he's never healthy late in October, and he's older too now. And so I don't know. Yeah, I mean, you kind of knew it was going to happen, right? Like, even like Twitter beforehand, like in the fifth inning, they're like, oh, Twitter's going to love this when they pull him and he's still perfect. And that's how it played out. Yeah, I don't know what to tell you. But one thing I do like what the baseball is doing is they have these guys, some guys mic'd up live in-game interviews during play, like in the middle of play. And those are made for some super it's not a viral moment because that doesn't really exist anymore, but like cool things that you can't really get in any other sport in that same way. Outfielder, like a center fielder just doing an interview as a bat is going on and then talking as he's running toward a ball that's been hit. So things like that are cool, and those things like that could help. But yeah, it's a lot of stuff going the opposite direction as far as fan attention for baseball.
Fair enough. I just had to get your take on it because I know you're a big baseball guy, and it just made me so mad. Especially if I was in attendance of that game, which very well could have been because it's Minneapolis. It was in Minneapolis, but as a diehard sports fan, especially with baseball, like all you ever want to do is witness like a cycle or a perfect game, basically, or a walk off, and then to be that close to a perfect game and have it be Clayton Kershaw and then him just pull it.
And you wonder if this had happened in July, I think he definitely gets put out there. You know, he's been stretched out. It's just the worst timing for this to happen. His first start of the season, after he had just been thrown a little bit in spring training that was, short, truncated spring training. Yeah, it was just like the worst time for him to pitch like one of the best games of his career. And then obviously in the eighth inning, the second batter of the eighth inning gets a hit and against the reliever. And I mean, but also the Twins avoided getting, embarrassed in their first week. it was still embarrassing to get one hit. But anyway, we are reviewing the day the series stopped, which is a baseball baseball documentary, sort of. As we discovered as we watched this one, it is about the 1989 World Series in the Bay Area between the Oakland A's and the San Francisco Giants. Game three specifically, when an earthquake took place on that day. It was October 17th of 89. And it was the worst earthquake in the United States since 1906, I think at the time. Ultimately, I think it was 63 people died. There was this major bridge, the Bay Bridge going between Oakland and San Francisco. Part of it kind of collapsed and killed people. It was this kind of gruesome sight. And this documentary talks through the, they get into it with the baseball game, right? The World Series game, this two rival teams in the same area. And then they kind of described how just the chaos of that day, you know, the players getting their families out of the stands, talking about the infrastructure of the Candlestick Park in San Francisco where it's being played, and the safety issues. There's some of the cracks that were happening and the things that were safe and were not there. And then obviously all the fires, and whatever, you know, other things that the earthquake caused in the entire Bay Area. It talks to some survivors of it, some first responders, you know, decades later. And that's kind of how it was. It was very non-sports heavy, you know, just because of the events of it. And then at the very end, they showed how they played it 10 days later after they delayed that game three. They played game three 10 days after that earthquake, and the A's went on to win the World Series. I think they swept it, I believe, in four. And that's kind of the summary of it. So what did you guys think? Nick, what do you think this one, first of all?
Yeah, I think the thing that stuck out to me most was just the breadth of perspectives that they got for this documentary, looking at first responders, looking at random fans, fans from both sides, looking at players or managers on the team, looking at, you know, old videos with like the commissioner and how they were handling the game and that sort of a thing. It was interesting to see just the you know, variety, I guess, of perspectives that they got. And it's and it kind of, you know, made I guess it was just a good example of like how different people understood what was going on, or the people's different perspectives. I feel like anytime that you go through something like so catastrophic, like everybody describes it differently because it's such a significant event that you went through, but everybody, you know, remembers it exactly how they remember it or how it was for them. And what I mean by that is just, it's obviously one of those, you know, where were you moments, especially when you were in it, you know, whether you're at the stadium or just in the city or what, but obviously a monumental event and interesting to get the different perspectives. Yeah, what did you think, Sam?
I thought it was really cool that the A's and the Giants were the two teams who were playing in this World Series when this all happened.
Yeah, that was a good point.
Yeah, I just had never really, one, had never really heard this story, and then two, just the fact that both those teams were greatly impacted by it, and their cities were obviously greatly impacted by it. That really added to the whole story, I think. But overall, I wasn't the biggest fan of this doc. I thought, I just thought it was a little bit too long. Like, I think that this would have been an awesome, like, ESPN short, maybe like 10 to 15 minutes. Get some interviews. Talk about, you know, the ramifications that could have happened if the stadium hadn't been reconstructed or fixed with, like, the year prior, which they had talked about. I don't know. I just didn't necessarily think it needed to be 51 minutes. I get what they were trying to do, but especially for it being an ESPN 30 for 30, there was definitely a lack of sports-related content, in my opinion. What do you think, Ruben?
Yeah, I mean, I tend to agree with parts of that. It's interesting. It was 51 minutes, which is on the shorter end, but I still sort of agree as far as it was one of those shorter docs that felt a little bit too long still. Sometimes we'll watch an hour and 40-minute one and think it's, you know, it's the perfect length. But just to kind of get into some of the production of it, it wasn't necessarily like a super clean or like beautifully edited or shot one. There's some very unique like styles they chose. In the beginning, it was kind of interesting. They tried like the color tints with fans, so they would indicate if they're talking about the A's with a major green tint, like a really strong, and then orange for the Giants. So they made some choices like that. There was some good editing, had some good, nice music sequences and quick edits. The Goodyear blimp thing I thought was really interesting, just as far as the production, just getting access to that. It was really a cobbled together sort of thing. It's, they just gathered tons of local news footage, tons of, you know, ESPN footage, tons of whatever they could get and put it together. So it kind of was reminiscent of some of those other ones that we did, like the one with the Chicago Olympics and the car chase one? What's his name? OJ one? It might have been.
OJ?
Yeah. Like, it kind of reminded me of that. Yeah. When,
like, June in 1994?
Yeah, like, when everything was, like... So, I mean, the production of it wasn't as, perfect, I guess, as some of the other ones that we've seen. Did you guys notice anything as far as that? Besides it being, hardly any sports within this documentary.
I definitely noticed the colored tint at the beginning. That was a bold choice. What I did notice was I felt like there wasn't a necessary like theme to it. It just seemed kind of random. And I don't know if I can necessarily describe it really well, but I never really felt like, I remember having a thought in the middle of it and I was like, it was if like someone had done like a high school or a college project and done like a really good job where everyone, you know, you would have gotten an A and it was awesome, but you were kind of like experimenting and like trying to find out who you were as the director, if that makes sense. Like, you're like, I'm going to dabble with this for the first 10 to 15 minutes. And then I'm going to change it up for the next 10 to 15 minutes and see how that goes. And that's just kind of like my takeaway from it.
Yeah. It wasn't cohesive enough.
Yeah, exactly. That's how I felt.
And I felt like they got through with one story and then I was waiting for it to go somewhere and then I would like completely start over with another story. And then I'd get through and they might build on something that story would say and then they would, you know, like revert back. And I just felt like it was like you're in a ping pong match or, you know, a tennis match, just like going back and forth. It was kind of hard to follow. I felt like some of the, there's the one like, I forget what the guy was even saying, if it was the main press box commentator or what, but he was like, they put his voice over as he was saying exactly what he said out on that day. And that was super cheesy. I don't know if you remember that.
I like that. That was the Goodyear blimp guy.
Oh, that was the blimp. Oh yeah.
And he was reciting what someone had told him in his ear, I think, during that time.
Yeah.
And somehow he knew exactly verbatim how it went. And then they put that in his, they muted him and put it. And so I was like, oh, that's actually interesting. And it worked so well. So it was kind of a flex to me.
All right. I did like when they like went over the stadium, whether or not the stadium would have collapsed if it hadn't been, you know, being addressed or brought up to code, like that sort of deal, and kind of the, and then how the stadium is built in different sections and how that, you know, helps stabilize it. I thought that point was really cool, but that was the most engaged that I was during the whole thing. And to go to Sam's point, it was, you know, like 51 minutes. I was like, oh, perfect. Like, you know, finally a short one. We've had some long ones lately. And I got, you know, 30 minutes in and I'm like, yeah, this could have been done about 20 minutes ago. I just felt like it was either like a good ESPN short, like you said, Sam, or like a local news, you know, 10, 15 minute special, you know, remember when this happened 30 years ago or, you know, whatever anniversary date it would have been. But
I completely agree. I was really into the stadium structure and all of that, and when they randomly had Boomer on there talking about it, or Chris Berman, sorry. Mm-hmm. And then the other part that I was very fascinated by was the guy who was 200 feet up on the light pole when the earthquake hit, and he said he was just holding on for dear life, and like he was looking down at this huge steel beam, and the steel beam was just like flowing in, like as if it was just like string or something. And I just thought that that was such an amazing story that they, I'm glad that they included.
I like that too. There, I had that written down. There were a couple, like, you know, good characters that they found. And I was kept thinking, like, how did they find these guys? Like the one guy who was a firefighter and he was like the lone survivor on that bridge in that one spot. Everyone else around him got crushed in their cars, and he broke like his entire back and legs and shoulder, and but he survived. And they found like, that guy, they found the light post guy and some other people. So I feel like there were so many good elements. Like you said, Nick, the interesting thing about how they had just done construction on the stadium to make sure it was safer and the timing of that. I wonder now, I'm just thinking this, like if it had a narrator, because it didn't, right? Like maybe if it had a narrator, it would have been a little more cohesive, and we could have connected some of these stories better and made it more cohesive on a theme, like connected the fact that it was such a rare thing that two teams in the same area were playing, and then connected that and made it be more, you know, have a better arc at the end when the A's won, to make that be like maybe the you know, happy ending or whatever. It just did leave me wanting a little. I guess I ultimately did like it, you know, enough just because it of so many good elements. And I specifically don't want to judge these because they're not sporty enough or like have enough sports in them, just because I feel like this was a great idea for a documentary, for ESPN, just because that was a big part of it. Like, what are the odds that these things happen during this major sporting event with the area so involved? And so I can't really give them any points off for how, like, we saw no game action hardly, but yeah, there was something that wasn't quite as satisfying to watch as I would have liked.
I feel like it would have been an interesting point to like point out, like put it on all on a map. And I feel like you had to have some knowledge, like background knowledge of like where the bridge was, where the stadium was, or like they would reference things. And I have no idea where any of that stuff is. So I feel like if they would have put it on a map and it would have been like, all right, like at 503, you know, like, oh, let's go to the firefighter survivor guy that's, you know, driving down where he's driving down. And then you like pan over to, you know, wherever, maybe at 505, like after it all hits, you say, you know, that bridge collapses, but then you go to the guy that's like up on the steel beam and like seeing how that's like swaying. And I don't know, I feel like that could have been maybe put together. Like one idea I just had of putting it together that way. Yeah. But
yeah, that could have been a way to use what they had already gathered, these great characters, and then make it more digestible. And yeah, for sure. I actually just was in San Francisco last summer and I flew into Oakland, and then we went on the train from there to San Francisco and stayed in San Francisco downtown. And so that was interesting. Like we went on the bridge and I think so. Yeah. Maybe not. Maybe we went under the bay, but like we saw the vantage point of all the different things. So it was interesting to see that. And I hadn't really known. I mean, I feel like maybe I'd heard about this happening, but I hadn't. I don't know if I had. Maybe it was something else. But it was such a, you know, a wild thing for it to happen. And, you know, the World Series was happening in that town. It could have been happening anywhere else, but there happened to be an earthquake that hadn't, you know. First time in over 80 years there had been one that big. Do you want to get to a rating? Anything else, guys?
I was just gonna add, I completely agree with you that this is like a story worth telling in a documentary, and it's a huge moment in sports history that we probably should have known about. But the lack of like destruction to the stadium kind of prevented it from being a bigger story, I think, if that makes sense. As far as in sports history, at least, like if that stadium goes down and hundreds or thousands of people are injured or killed, it's one of the biggest sports stories ever, probably. Mm. Instead, you know, the stadium held up, luckily, and everything for the most part was fine, other than, you know, the destruction that happened in the rest of the city. And it delayed the World Series by 10 days, but then everything in sports like remained the same.
Yeah. So you basically wanted people to die. It's bad. It's shitty of you, but whatever.
The documentary.
Exactly. That if they're gonna make 51 minutes, something like that has to happen.
Okay. Yeah. No. I hear you. My rating to get to the ultimate rating here, I'm gonna give it a 6.05 spaghetti light poles like that guy was talking about. He described them looking. Just because of the good elements. That's why I ranked it that high. I kind of went back and forth and forth lower. And then I basically laid out all the reasons already. What do you think, Sam?
I rated this one pretty low, especially for me. I went with 5.65 light poles, the same reason. I already stated most of the reasons. I thought it was a little bit too long. Could have been shorter. It was a story worth telling, but not my favorite production or storyline, I guess.
Give me the low one out of everyone here. I'm going to go with a 4.75. Yeah, I just didn't really like it.
Not basketball, we know.
Crazy coop. Sorry. I didn't get my rating fully. But there was that, they showed a video of, it must have been in like a preschool or something. And this kid was like diving under a little cozy coop, you know, like one of those little, play cars or whatever. And I couldn't tell if they're trying to like hide, you know, to protect themselves or if they were just stuck under it. And it was kind of entertaining.
Yeah, I was like, whoa, did he get crushed by his toy car? Like everyone else is getting crushed by real cars? Like what the heck? That was so bizarre.
All right. That puts us 49th out of 59 with a total of 5.48 out of 10.
5.48. Yeah, middling. What's the lowest that we ever done again? Our worst one?
The dotted line, which was the NFL agent one, I believe.
What would we give it?
4.59.
It's still like too high not for that one specifically, just for like our scope, you know. We should have one in the threes.
We'd have to think. I'm too optimistic, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, it should have been. But silly little game, we had somebody bring it up.
Wait, who was that? Was that me or you, Sam?
That was me. I rated it high. Yeah, I mean, silly little game was one of the best documentaries that we've ever seen. And I really enjoyed it. And I'm happy that I brought the rating up while you guys brought it down.
Yeah. You're under the weather right now and you're kind of just, you're like, you're not talking straight. So we'll move on. okay. We're going to go to Mount Rushmore now, which snow blowing sideways today here on April 14th. Windy, miserable, cold. And so we're going to do indoor, like rainy day activities on Mount Rushmore. So I don't know exact rules what we're going to go by, but, you know, it has to be inside, something you do when you're holed up. Take us away.
Something you do when you're holed up, huh? I haven't done a lot of preparation for this, which is unlike me for Mount Rushmore, so I'm going to be winging it.
Yeah, I've done none.
Mount Rushmore of rainy day activities. I think I'm just going to take the obvious one on the board here, and it's just going to binge streaming services. Netflix, Hulu, Amazon Prime, HBO Max, all of the above. Just relax, nice blanket, and watch them all.
Nice. Classic.
Well, with my pick, as I'm doing that, I'm likely going to fall asleep. So, nice little nap.
Afternoon nap.
Okay, I'm going to go with eat. Because when I'm like stuck inside, I'm just eating nonstop. Like, even if I'm not hungry, like today, I mean, I have eaten like 3 meals and I'm like snacking right now and I'm like starving. Like I've never not been starving all day today. I've just been inside all day. I'm awkward. Like I'm just eating nonstop.
maybe your like killer instinct kicks in when the weather's bad and your metabolism rises.
I hope so, because I'm eating too much. And then my next one is gonna be drink. I actually haven't drunk anything today, but there's some Coors Lights calling my name, so yeah, that's my answer.
I like it. Those are simple ones. Eat, drink.
Just survive.
Yeah, Nick did sleep.
Next one's gonna be breathe.
Yeah.
Just take some deep breaths now. I'm gonna say if you have like a screened in porch, if it's like warm, like let's say it's during the summer and it's just like a nice light rain, screened in porch that you can just basically be outside, but not, and then just, well, probably nap or watch TV or something like that, read a book.
So like kind of sitting like near the outside, you can kind of hear the rain.
Yeah. Just sitting outside without having to get wet, basically, or be bothered by the rain. If it's a nice, you know, nice, gentle, rainy day.
Yeah, I like that. I'm going to go with meal prepping. I feel like it's something that you never really want to do if it's nice outside or if you have other stuff to do. But if you have no other plans and the weather's kind of bad, you're like, hey, you want to like analyze? So I was like, I want to just like make a couple meals, but always a good thing to do. You guys feel a little more productive. I guess I'll just say like off for a long time, whether it's like organizing some, like a random closet or something, or just things that you've been putting off for a while. So it's kind of generic, but
all right.
This isn't going to be one that I do, but I'll think of Erin, my wife, what she would do on a rainy day. She'd be downstairs taking cover, storm shelter.
When there's a storm, generally I was raised to peek outside the door and see what's going on up in the sky.
Oh, yeah, that's such a classic dad. Really, yeah. Now that you're...
I can't wait till this summer when I can do that.
Just out on the porch, like looking at the fog. Like, I'd say that's about 3 miles away, give or take.
Yeah, I think it'll miss us. the center of it, the storm. All right, I'm gonna kind of go off of what you were saying, Sam. Doing laundry. I already did a load today. Might do another one. I feel like it's a good indoor thing. It takes a while to just sit and wait for the loads to, you know, cycle through, but it's a good thing to do when you're stuck inside and you can't do anything else. So getting the loads of laundry done with, it's a good one, I think. And then my last one is going to be like playing 2K or Madden or something, because sometimes like those are time consuming and I'll feel like guilty if I'm just sitting there for like hours doing it. But then if it's raining and miserable outside, then it's a little more fun and you don't feel as guilty, I guess. So yeah.
I'm gonna say read a book. Yeah, nobody said that, right?
Right after I said video games, you're making me look so bad.
because I was gonna say video games. And not necessarily read a book for myself. More realistically, just read my daughter books.
They're a little easier to understand.
The last one on the list, huh? Wow, I really don't have an answer. You guys took all the good ones.
Do, 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 do.
Help me out. Help me out.
What did you do today?
Learn how to juggle.
Learn a new skill. Love it. I love it. Learn a new skill. Actually, okay. So that's a good one, Rudy. I actually taught myself to juggle when I was in elementary school on like a rainy day. My brother had like a juggling kit and I just was like, I'm just going to teach myself how to juggle. And so I spent like hours and hours and hours teaching myself, and I've known how to juggle ever since.
Wow.
On to the summary. Mount Rushmore of rainy day activities. I had binge streaming services, meal prepping, crossing off to-do lists that you've been avoiding, and learning a new skill. Rudy went with an afternoon nap, sitting outside without being in the rain, or like a screen-in porch, taking shelter in the basement or reading a book. Ren went with eating, drinking, doing laundry, and playing 2K or Madden.
The four pillars of life right there.
That's all you need to survive. A functional life is right there. All right, let's move on to a documentary wish list. It's my turn this week, and my idea might not be even worth 51 minutes, so just a disclaimer off the top. I want to do a documentary on eating food within Major League Baseball. So what I mean is not what you're thinking. You're thinking, oh, baseball parks have hot dogs and stuff. No. I'm talking about the things that the players eat or put in their mouths during games. So we're talking sunflower seeds and tobacco mostly, gum also. Those are the big three. There's probably, yeah, I mean, and there's people still have their own routine. So I feel like you just dive deep into several players that, number one, you got to find Terry Francona because he always put like 7 pieces of gum. He still does in his mouth and never chewed. I used to think it was tobacco, but it's really just a big, huge wad of gum. Maybe he does tobacco sometimes. So people's gum habits, their chewing tobacco habits, and their sunflower seed habits. And then you can mix in other stories of people eating hot dogs in a game sneakily, you know, going up to the concourse. Cause I've heard those stories of Major League Baseball players like eating dinner during the game, or people, relief pitchers in the first inning, they're like down there eating. Also, relief pitchers often just chug a Red Bull before they go start to warm up, and as they get ready for like a closer does that. I've heard those stories. And so like the side stories along with the main routines with eating in baseball. Wonderful. I know we can't really hear me, but I think this is recording anyway. So thanks for your feedback. Everyone is actually standing up and cheering for my answer. And since we can't hear, we're just going to close out the podcast now once I give what our next documentary will be. I'm going to pull it up real quick.
All right, next week we have episode 65, When the Garden Was Eden, a look back at the New York Knicks championship teams of the 1970s from October of 2014, directed by Michael Rapaport.
Nice, okay. Thanks for listening, everyone. We're getting out of here on that. See you next week.